Behind the news. Time check. It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, and linking up with all our regional FM stations, my name is Kingsley Obinchere, welcoming you to Behind News, our news and current affairs program, examining issues from the perspective of newsmakers and the experts. For tonight, Public Accounts Committee of Parliament and its sittings. What next after the revelation of financial irregularities in the Auditor General's report? How is the boardroom wranglings affecting the STS Korea housing project? And should traveling in the night be banned to control the spate of highway robberies? How workable is that suggestion? We'll be exploring all these and bits and pieces of others. But before then, we go to Barbara Yakubu for a summary of the day's news.
Thank you, Kingsley. President John Evans Atta Mills has deplored the quest for materialism, prosperity and faith healing, which has taken the center stage in most churches in Ghana of late. This craving, he said, has become one of the quickest means of making money. President Mills made the point in a message to the 8th National Congress of the Catholic Sacred Heart of Jesus in Koforidua. An expert in local governance and lecturer at GIMPA, Professor Kwamina Ahoy, has called for the abolishment of central controls in the local government system. He said most of these controls are unnecessary and do not offer solutions for its development. Professor Ahoy said this at the inaugural lecture at GIMPA as part of activities marking the school's 50th anniversary. A group calling itself Forum for Governance and Justice, with support from 8 pressure groups, has expressed its displeasure over the alleged continuous victimization of 4 legal practitioners who are reported to have made comments about perceived corruption in the judiciary. At a news conference in Bogatanga, it was revealed that the 4 lawyers, namely Dr. Raymond Atuguba, Abraham Amaleba, David Annan, and the late Larry Bimi, have since been denied access to the court since May this year. And the Executive Committee of the Civil and Local Government Staff Association Ghana, CLOSAC, has appealed to its regional and district executives, as well as the rank and file of the association, to suspend the intended industrial action against the delay in their migration onto the single spine salary structure by the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. The decision was reached after an emergency meeting in Kumasi. Back to you, Kingsley.
Thank you, Barbara. It's Behind the News on Radio Ghana, linking up with all our regional FM stations. As usual, we encourage you to send in your text and comment to text line 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on to our first story. Another sitting of the Public Accounts Committee of Parliament has taken place. The committee scrutinized the report of public institutions from 2007 to 2009. As in the past, a lot of financial improprieties have been revealed. The question is, what is going to happen to those who have been found to have caused the improprieties? Critics say, since no punishment has been meted out to the officials and institutions whom corruption has been leveled against in the past, they are asking the Public Accounts Committee, what next? Behind the News is finding out more on these issues. And first, to join us on the line with this exploration, it's Amadou Seidi, the ranking member of the Public Accounts Committee and NDC MP for Yape Kusol. You are welcome, sir, to the program. Hello, Mr. Amadou Seidi. I guess we are having a few challenges with Mr. Amadou Seidi's line. Yes. Mr. Amadou Seidi, I understand you've rejoined us.
Yeah, I'm on the line, sir.
Yes, you are welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes. Generally, can you tell us about how your sittings went before we start delving deeper into why we should even sit on the Auditor General's report?
Yes, I think the sitting has been very, very good. We will see a lot of cooperation from the invitees, the auditees. And I think members generally have been able to ask the appropriate questions to elicit answers they've been looking for in respect to the Auditor General's report.
Yes. So it's been fine for you, but there are outsiders who are wondering, if something has been identified, why don't we go straight on and ask the people about it directly from the Auditor General? What is the constitutional mandate that tells you to delve deep into the issues?
Yes, you know, by law, it's only the Auditor General that has the right to audit public institutions that subsist on the consolidated fund. And normally, these are audited reports that are done on annual basis. At the end of which the report is submitted before Parliament, before the Speaker, and the Speaker will subsequently refer it to the Public Accounts Committee for their investigation and report to Parliament.
Yeah, you've mentioned annual basis, but in this case, we are having 2007 to 2009. The other concern is that the people who were in charge during those times will not be the same when it delays. Don't you see this as a big problem?
That has been the biggest challenge facing the Public Accounts Committee and the Auditor General himself. I think that so far they've done so well, they worked so hard. Then dealing with the 2009 auditor reports. They're hoping that come next year, we'll have current reports to contend with. It is indeed true that most of the officers who have been questioned now are people who were not there at the time most of the evaluation took place. In some of the cases, or in most of the cases. But of course, every institution is an entity, it's a legal entity that can be sued and that can also sue. Therefore, whoever finds himself in that particular position reserves the right to respond to the audit queries. That is exactly why we are there, and that is the position of the law. It doesn't matter whether you were there before or not. And at any rate, a query that I raised in respect to a certain specific malfeasance, we expect that the current officers will link up with those people to make sure that they get the appropriate responses from them. And where there's a need to sanction the people appropriately.
Yeah, so it won't necessarily be that because they are responding, they will take full responsibility for whatever, as you use the word, malfeasance.
No, naturally, once you end up in public capacity, you have to assert responsibility, if even you are not the one who committed those crimes personally. That is how public services are run.
Yeah. Please take us through the process. Perhaps what appears on television is what all will see. But is there something that happens with the reports before you start sitting in public?
Yeah, if you look at the Auditor General's report, the reports are normally very bulky. And the report on so many things. But of course, because of limited time, we're not able to go into details of every audit query that is raised. Unfortunately, again, some of the queries are by the same. When it comes to the issue of, salaries that are paid, to people who do not deserve to take the salary, and they cut across. When it comes to payments that are not converted by PVs and the other receipts, when it comes to issue of fuel that are not logged in vehicle law books, they cut across. But in between, there are other issues that are raised in the report. We now find time to ask all of them, but we'll ask the major ones. So at the end of the day, the report will capture the major malfeasance that reported back to Parliament for action.
So in this case, you had 5 days. Would you say that you were able to cover all the major things you wanted to do?
In fact, in respect of all the ministry, department agents that appear before us, I can say yes, we did.
Yeah, but there was a concern about not being able to cover the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Why?
Yeah, it has been the tradition of the committee to make sure that ministers or their deputies, attend upon the invitation of the Public Accounts Committee. Unfortunately, both the subordinate minister and his deputies were, engaged in other matters of state outside Accra. So naturally, they couldn't come. And I think the minister arranged to make sure that the chief director, ably supported by other directors within the ministry, come. But because we are taking the decision alone, because why ministers to be there, there will be issues of policy to be raised in the way we meet them. As a result of which we said, okay, when the ministers were not there, we will not take them. But I think later yesterday, we met again to reconsider our position, to say, okay, for hence we'll be looking at all ministries, whether the minister is available or not.
Yeah. So for you, sitting on these reports, revelations about 2.7 billion cedis being not used very well by MDAs and financial regularities at DVLA as mentioned, and then NIA as mentioned, Are these the major ones to you, or you think there are others that have not been highlighted well?
Of course, if you really look at the proceedings right from ND, you know, they cut across all the ministries, you know, agencies and departments, and several other ones were raised as a result of the other ministries, you know.
Yeah.
So there are major things that were raised, or that came before.
So what happens to people? I know you hinted on it at the beginning of the interview. People who perhaps might not have done things well here.
Yes, some of them are administrative lapses. Others are outright fraud, you know, and financial malfeasance. In some of the cases, you know, action has already been initiated by getting the police involved. Once the matter goes before the police will carry out the investigation. There are locations, even the BNI has been involved in this. And those issues are now well taken to the Attorney General's Department. Eventually, they end up in court. There are some of the cases that are already in court. You know, there are other recoveries that are taking place, you know, without necessarily going through the media, the court. And I think that people are now responding positively to all these queries.
Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you very much, too. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, Samadi Seydou is the ranking member of the Public Accounts Committee and NDC MP for Yape Kusol, responding on the committee's work. Let's put it on record, too, that the first vice the vice chairman of the committee, Kwekwajima Menu, the MP for Doma West, was also billed to speak to us, but we've not been able to reach him as we speak. But one of the agencies mentioned is the National Identification Authority, and Dr. William Ahaji is the head of that institution. According to the report, the authority bought cartridges, which are expected to last for 20 years. Well, he's here to tell us much more as to whether, how this happened. You are welcome, sir, to the program once again.
Thank you.
Yes, what about this purchase of cartridges meant to last for 20 years?
Thank you very much. I have already indicated that it is impossible to buy cartridges to last for 20 years. Indeed, we as an authority began this exercise through the mass registration exercise, and every workstation has a printer on it. So at any time that we are involved in enrollment data collection, we use quite a large amount of cartridges. That's number one. Number two is that the authority was established with the intention of decentralizing into the regions and the district at the same time, or at least within a short period, which means that we would have had 10 regional offices and about 60 district offices that will also be involved in the enrollment and card distribution. For those offices, procurement was made for that volume of procurement was made so we could do the exercise virtually at the same time. That explains why we have such huge volumes, but they were not bought for 20 years. Cartridges cannot last more than 2 years, so I don't think that my predecessors intended to buy cartridges that would last for 20 years. They wouldn't have a shelf life up to 20 years.
Yeah, so did the people really understand when you had to point this out, that when it's a simultaneous exercise, you need such large volumes at the same time?
Yes, I made that clear at the sitting of the Public Accounts Committee, that it wasn't that it was bought to last for 20 years, but that it was meant for a mass registration exercise. Indeed, as we speak, we've actually run out of cartridges, and the issue about the audit report was about the quality of some of the cartridges that were supplied to us, and they were defective. We had cause to think that we didn't get value for money, and so we made contact with the suppliers trying to call for a replacement of those defective cartridges. It's been a long, drawn-out battle to a point where we got a bit tired, and we had to seek relief from the court. We filed a statement of claim in the court so we can recover public money that's gone into purchasing defective cartridges. That's the key issue in the audit report.
Yeah, but how is that case going?
The case is before court, so we cannot make any statements on it. But as you know, the courts are on vacation. It will resume in the commercial court when the courts return.
So you are telling us that there isn't that number of cartridges, we have to understand.
No, please.
Okay.
No, please.
But generally, I know you would have followed the proceedings at the sittings. How do you describe it as aiding our development as a country?
I think, personally, I think it's a very, very positive development. It puts all of us who have been put in charge of public funds, on the alert. You're managing public funds, and there are rules and regulations under which you have to manage the funds. So if you flout any of these rules, then you're opening yourself up for all the sanctions that are prescribed under the rules. So for those of us who are handling public monies, this public, accounting of public monies is useful. You can't take things for granted because it's not your money. You're just managing public money. So I personally think that it serves as a warning to us, but it also challenges us to get value for money, and so we can deliver on the mandate of our specific institutions for the benefit of the people of Ghana.
Yes, thank you very much.
Pay taxes and pay us.
Yes, but before we let you go, a quick concern come in. Where are we with the distribution of the ID cards and the registration of those who have not had the opportunity?
Okay, two quick points. First of all, we are still doing the distribution of the Ghana card. We are wrapping up in Ablekuma North tomorrow, and then we'll relocate into the Ashiedu Keteke and Osukulote next week. What we have done also is that where we don't complete the distribution, we leave a team, about five teams in those particular submetros to continue the mop up as we move into the next one. So that exercise is continuing. We also have places where people who haven't registered at all can go and register as we do the card distribution. So that's also going on. And also, as you probably know, we are collecting data in the Bronga Hafu region, and as and when we receive money, we are going to move a larger number of people out there to do the exercise. May I quickly also add that we have begun some discussions with the National Service team to assist us with quite a large number of National Service persons, so we can hasten the pace of the card distribution. So these are strategies that we've adopted to make sure that more people get their cards, because we really need to move them out of our warehouse as quickly as possible.
Yeah, we'll be following that one in a later program. But for now, Dr. William Ahaji, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
That is the Executive Secretary of the National Identification Authority. But we earlier mentioned that the Vice Chairman of the Committee, Mr. Kweku Ajimamenu, is billed to speak to us. We now have him on the line. Thank you, sir, so much for your time.
Thank you, my brother.
Yes, we earlier had your fellow member talking about the fact that the exercise has been very useful. From your perspective, what has been your major challenge for this particular sitting?
I wouldn't want to identify any serious challenge at the moment. Looks like we're programmed to do something. And so far, for the last 5 days ending today, we have sort of achieved what we planned to do without any serious hindrance. And all those we invited had actually honored our invitation, with the exception of our Minister of Foreign Affairs. But that was a very unfortunate incident. The Minister wasn't available. The Deputy Minister wasn't available. And at that particular moment, our chairman was away on another assignment, not knowing that the Minister had actually sought permission from the chairman, but he actually hadn't mentioned it to me. So we sent them back, the chief director and the other directors who came, because our convention, our practice is that we wouldn't want to do anything without the minister and his deputy. And therefore, we sent them back, but we will reschedule to meet with them. Apart from this hitch, I think I want to believe that everything went on very smoothly and we had a very successful session.
Yeah. So, like my man, previously, and we are talking comparatively with other sittings, how would you say this one went in terms of the type of misappropriation being used advisedly here, or malfeasance as was used earlier by your colleague?
We are seeing a certain trend, and it goes across ministries and the institutions. We saw earlier, sometime this year, the sort of things that the findings that auditors come up with are not very, very, very different. Issues like unearned salaries cut across all MDAs, including, the educational institutions. When we talk about unearned salaries, people severing relations with their organizations, just vacating their positions, some things like that. And then salaries will go through, and they will go to the bank and collect them, which is quite, which is against the financial regulations that we have in the country. Certain people in certain positions should take certain actions when people leave their posts like that. And we realize that they were not taking the actions quite in time to forestall people taking away government money that they haven't worked for. But that is very, very common practice. You know, then we have situations of what we call, the auditors call unrecorded stores. You know, they go buy certain things, we take them straight away to the user department, we use them without making records through the stores for these items. You know, and that goes across quite a lot. Instances of embezzlement, I wouldn't say it's very common across a board. You see some cases we get them, and some instances we don't see them. People not retiring interest. You know, that seems to be a very common sort of situation. So these are some of the things that I can mention. And I wouldn't say it is only these ministries we met over the last 5 days who have these challenges. It goes across some other ones that we have seen earlier as well.
Just following up on this, many people are concerned about the fact that these things seem to recur any time you go through these audited reports. And yet, since they are coming back, it means there's not been that level of action needed to stem the tide. What are you going to do this time around to make things different?
After we started looking at certain things, in one of our reports to the House, we have recommended that ministries who do not actually implement the recommendations of the Auditor General that have been strengthened or upheld by the committee may not have their budgets approved, and they cannot get monies released for them from the Minister of Finance. And Parliament has actually accepted this recommendation, and we are waiting to see a new budget for 2012. That will maybe read in November 2011. And then the approval systems and the recommendations that we have sent to Parliament for adoption, we'll see how it works. So all the findings that we have, all the recommendations that we have asked people to go and implement, if we find reports that they are not implementing, the Public Accounts Committee will advise Parliament that we shouldn't approve the annual budgetary estimates for certain ministries. They will recastifant ones, and therefore they will have no money to utilize to do their work come 2012.
So is it likely somebody can be prosecuted on some of the findings you made?
Oh, yes. You see, some of the recommendations are like, go and do recoveries, sanction somebody probably in terms of the prescriptions in the financial administration regulations. Some of these can be the usual queries we get at the workplace. But the very serious ones that need a prosecution and recommendations are said that if you prosecuted, we want to actually follow up to see if the prosecutions have been done. So we wait to see all those things being implemented as well.
We want to thank you very much to you for your time this evening, Mr. Kwaku Ajimamenu.
I'm also very grateful for your call.
That is the MP for Doma West and Vice Chairman of the committee, that is the Public Accounts Committee. Mr. Vitus Azim has been working on anti-corruption for some time. He's also joined us on the line. You are welcome, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Naturally, you have been observing the way things have been going for some time because of your stance against corruption. Are we succeeding with the way we are handling the issues of the Auditor General's report?
We are definitely not succeeding the way we're handling it, but you wouldn't blame the Public Accounts Committee. The Auditor General is doing his part and the Public Accounts Committee are doing their part. But then after that, what next? That's where the problem is. The prosecution, the recovery of monies that have been misused or stolen. And you see, part of the problem is the fact that this audit report delay, like there were cases where people have left, they're outside the country. How are you going to get them? maybe for those you think that one day you might get them, how about people who have died? So those are the problems. But it also points to one basic issue, or one basic problem, is the fact that the internal audit agency is not operating very efficiently and effectively. Because some of the issues that come up, like somebody has resigned and the fellow's name remains on the payroll, if the internal audit agency was operating effectively, this name should have been removed even before it gets to the Auditor General's report. So that's part of the problem. So first we need to strengthen the internal audit system, such that all payments pass through an internal auditor who decides that this should not be paid because the fellow has left or it is not according to the Financial Administration Act or regulations. When you do that, then even these malpractices will drastically reduce. And then when it gets to the Public Accounts Committee, whatever recommendations they make, then the need is to ensure that their recommendations are implemented.
So you believe that perhaps one of the key things that should be done is the strengthening of the internal audit agency?
Yes. We need to have a very strong internal audit system in each MDA.
Yes.
So that some of these things could even be prevented. Say, for example, somebody's name appears on the payroll for 6 months after the fellow has left. It shouldn't be the case. If there is a good internal audit system, they would have even removed the name after the first or the second month when the fellow has resigned.
Yes.
But it's because they are not working very well. Maybe some of them are not, and they are either not in, they are not in existence, or they are understaffed, and they are not able to check all these things.
Yes. But Mr. Vitus Azim, talking to the two honorable members of the House, it emerged that some of the problems are those that keep coming up, even with previous sittings. So, for you, what should be done to ensure that at least when recommendations are made, they are followed through?
You see, the last speaker spoke about maybe not approving the budgets of the MDAs if they are not. That is a misdirected. I see that to be misdirected, because why should the people who need water or who need drugs in their hospitals be penalized because a minister or some financial controller in an MDA has not been able to do his or her work well? Why are they not sanctioning the individuals that are found to have not applied public resources properly? Why would you recommend that you should not grant, that you should not approve the budget for that ministry because of one person or two people who have not done their work well? You should rather insist that you sanction people that have found to have defaulted in performing their duties. So that is one. But the second thing is that, yes, a minister is a politician, but he has the responsibility to ensure that he or she implements the recommendations of the Public Accounts Committee, and this is what is not happening. So there has to be some sanction on the heads of the various MDAs. Even if they are not individually involved, they have a responsibility to ensure that they implement the recommendations of the Public Accounts Committee that have been endorsed by Parliament. So we must first sanction the necessary people, the minister, the chief directors. These are the people that we should hold. If you hold the responsible, if you withhold their salaries, definitely they would make sure that they take action against those that are supposed to have recovered some monies, are supposed to have been prosecuted. But once you don't do that, then it becomes a waste of time for the Public Accounts Committee and even for the Auditor General.
We want to thank you very much, Mr. Vitus Azim, as you continue soldiering on these issues.
You're welcome.
That is the Executive Secretary of the Ghana Integrity Initiative. Behind the news, linking up with all our regional FM stations, you are live on Radio Savannah, Tamale, and Garden City Radio, Kumasi, together with Sunrise FM, Kuforidua. We have some of your tests here. David from UDS is saying, SCS Korea is a fiasco. The most universities are unable to take off and no gas to cook. Better Ghana, indeed. Aziz Donla, anyone found corrupt should face the full rigors of the law. Long live Behind the News. And thank you for wishing us well. And from Sally Awawest, the Public Accounts Committee should be made effective to punish those who are involved in malpractices. And this one is, they didn't have a name, but you're saying, hi, Kingsley Bravo, and tell politicians to give us a break. But you didn't tell us precisely where they should be given that break. And please remember to add your name. From Bavin, even if Professor Mills fulfills all his promises, the MPP will never appreciate it. God is the best judge. And from Lukman Gushio, okay, you are very tough when the chorus. Keep it up. Oh, thank you, Lukman, for the commendation. And it should also go to my team to working so hard behind the scenes there. And this one is saying, Kingsley, ask Dr. Haji why NIA refused to pay those of us who worked for the authority in Ashanti region. From Awiru Peter Aguna. Awiru Peter, when we next get Dr. Haji, we'll put your question across for you. And JK Woman Pondang, those public officers who misapplied public funds should be prosecuted and made to refund the amount involved. And Joseph from Sobiba, punishment should be meted out to those who embezzled funds or should be held accountable. Behind the news, live on Radio Central, Cape Coast, and Twin City Radio, Sekendi Takradi. We'll be back after this break.
Behind the news.
Behind the news, reaching you live on Ura Radio, Boga. If Ghanaians, and indeed policymakers, are tired of talking about an issue in the last year, it must certainly be the STX Korea housing deal. This project has been going back and forth with accusations and counter-accusations, as well as boardroom wranglings. The move is certainly dragging back the construction of the housing units. The latest news is that the Korean partners have sagged their Ghanaian frontman, BK Asamoah, but in a sharp rebuttal, BK Asamoah today issued a statement claiming to have rather kicked out the Korean partners. Ghanaians and indeed watchers of the STX deal are at a loss as to what exactly is happening to that deal. We have been joined on the line now by the chairman of the Parliamentary Committee on Works and Housing and also MP for Shai Osudoku, David Tete Asumin. You are welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, my brother.
The STX deal has been dogged by one crisis after the other, and just as when we are told that it's all going smooth, then one comes up again. Is this one really going to destroy whatever effort has been put in place in the past?
Well, thank you very much. Actually, when the minister came to Parliament to answer a question on the issue of the STS, he did mention that there was some kind of fighting over text between the partners. And he assured the House that it was in full control to resolve that issue amicably. So all of us are just hoping that that issue will be resolved. Until yesterday, today, that series of information started coming out as to who controls what. And so currently we are on recess, and we will be resuming stamp duty from Monday. And that is where I would want to find out what is actually the issue at stake. Yeah. So until Monday, I will not be able to confirm to you or affirm what is actually happening at the front of the NCA.
Yeah, but still exploring around those issues, assuming that what Mr. BK Asamoah has stated in another interview, that they found a new company, a new partner from America to undertake the deal, would that affect whatever has been approved of by Parliament?
Oh, no. I mean, that is the issue of technology that they wanted to adopt. In fact, I'm aware of that move to involve the American technology in the housing process. I'm aware of that arrangement, but I know that is also being done together with all the partners. And so, for us to hear that one of the partners has been fired is news to me. But just as I said, Monday we want to hear from both sides as to what is actually the case.
I know you want to hear from both sides, but please hold on for a moment for us. We want to go to your colleague in Parliament from the other side of the House. Madam Cecilia Dapa is ranking member on Works and Housing in Parliament. Madam, perhaps for you, you will say this is a deja vu, but it's still important we talk about it since it's been approved by Parliament. With all the crisis bedeviling the STC Korea housing project, how do you see us making progress with it?
Good evening and thank you. Good evening to all our listeners. I believe, as you well know, this project, the contract on it was approved in Parliament, and we were all expecting the houses to come up for our security people to stay in, and maybe the rest to be built for other Ghanaians to benefit from. If it is not happening, I believe the president should call all stakeholders to order so that this tussle and fighting over TEF will stop. And if this deal will go on, then it goes on. If it cannot go on, it cannot go on. Update the contract for maybe another option to be explored. This question of since the day the thing was approved, there's been a fight between the stakeholders or partners. I'll say partners, not stakeholders. And I don't think this augurs well for the nation. More so, when this project was touted internationally and nationally and locally as the best thing that happened to Ghana in the housing sector. Yes, we all do want our security forces and all Ghanaians to be housed. The previous government tried under 2 years to provide almost 5,200 pieces of completion. They are still there, hanging in there. Some have been left in the bushes. And I believe Ghana should sit up so that we complete these houses and even put these security forces in some of them. It doesn't spoil anything.
Okay.
And if the STX deal or project is not working, you see, this new option or arrangements that the ministry and other people are trying to put together is not new. The Western Forms technology is not new. I led a delegation to the place in Kansas, and a 10-man delegation trying to explore how best to use their technology. So still on the cards, and we're out. If they mean to go there and bring that technology to Ghana, fine. If that will work, fine.
Yeah.
If they are going to substitute that arrangement in lieu of STX, I don't know contractually and legally how these things are going to.
Yeah, so we are posing that question. Is it necessary that it is brought back to Parliament for you to scrutinize whatever new measures?
I cannot say that it should be brought to Parliament. You see, what I know is that there are steps to be taken. Parliament approved a specific project under contract, and that was between STX Korea or STX Ghana and whoever was supposed to see to the completion of this project. If that is not working, I believe it is simple and clear that that particular arrangement should be, or contract should be abrogated for a new one to be put in place.
Okay.
I mean, the government shouldn't feel too much under pressure not to admit or to admit that the STX originally, the original STX project or deal is not working. So we are going to package a housing policy or vision into another project. I mean, that shouldn't be difficult for government to do.
Okay.
I don't see why we should be going forwards and backwards, and day in and day out, there's fighting between the partners. And I think everybody says, oh, Ghana is not paying any money. But the image that our sovereign guarantee was issued and it's been played with or played around with, and I don't think those of us in Parliament who represent our people should sit down for this thing to go on.
Okay.
I think government should call their partners to order.
Okay. Madam Cecilia Adapa, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
You're welcome.
Yes. Coming back to you, Mr. David Esumen, you've heard what your counterpart is saying on this particular issue, that perhaps if there are challenges and government cannot go on, a repackaging and redirection will do. You are saying you have to go to Parliament before you can adequately comment. But is this feasible, a suggestion?
Oh, thank you very much. I think that this time around, my senior colleague sounds very nationalistic. And that is what all of us will have to do
to move this country forward. We need to work as a team. Just as she said, the uncompleted affordable houses that are lying there will have to be completed. And I'm glad that the president himself has taken keen interest to get these unfinished buildings completed. And so that is what we need to be doing. I mean, on the side of this arrangement, the SCS arrangement, it's just true that we must bring partners to order. And then, and so I'm saying that my committee will be taking a firm decision on this issue, especially those on the NDC side. We're going to take a very firm decision on this this matter to make sure that this rendering stops. Because the project is key to us. I mean, it's here to us. And we can't afford, I mean, people struggling with this project. And so let me use this opportunity to ask the partners to cease fire. I want to urge Mr. B. K. Asamoah to exercise the fullest restraint as far as the Koreans, that in the interest of this nation, they must cease fire and allow, you know, peace to prevail, because we will not countenance any form of, you know, misunderstanding as far as this project is concerned. And just as I said, early next week when we resume, the committee is going to take keen interest to know what is actually happening to get this issue resolved. And I believe that the minister, who I'm told is out, will have to terminate whatever he's doing, whatever he is, to come and assist to address this issue. Because for me, this is a key issue for us to resolve. We cannot continue with this wrangling between the partners. Okay. So, once again, I'm urging the partners to cease fire and hold their peace to allow the issue and get it resolved for this project to take off as expected.
Okay. Mr. Sumin, we'll still please ask you to hold on quickly as we speak to one of the agencies that has tried to always talk about the fact that there is a big challenge with this housing project. That is Imani. They have been talking about it right from the beginning, and the Vice President Kofi Bentele is on the line. You are welcome once again to Behind the News.
Thank you.
Would you be advising government to take a second look at the deal?
Yes, we've said that from the beginning, that in the first place, the best use of $1.5 billion is not to build police barracks. Secondly, if we wanted to build police barracks, we could have Ghanaians do it for half of the cost. And there was no reason why we should go to Korea, because the Koreans didn't have any money to give us, and they didn't have any technology that we don't have. And then the STS company itself, we think, is not telling us the truth, everything that we needed to know, if we are going to put $1.5 billion behind them. 1 year down the line, everything the government has promised has not happened. And the things that we suspected, the fears that we had, that there was no money from Korea, that there was no special technology, and then the STS company itself, you know, whether it was a subset of the Korean one or so, a number of things, you know, seem to be the issues that have culminated in the current impasse. Now, with all due respect to the gentleman, it is not government's business to go and solve the boardroom problems of a private company. If even we need to build barracks, and this company is clearly not capable of doing it, why are we bending backwards to try and solve their private problems so they can come and build barracks for us? If the government wants to build barracks, they can go tomorrow and float a tender and they'll get the barracks built. And clearly what Parliament passed is not what SDF is doing right now. So our point is simple. This thing has been problematic from the beginning, and we still can't see a way through. What is it with SDX that is making my government incapable of just walking off and getting this thing done some other way? That's simply our point.
Okay. Thank you very much for that point. Mr. Sumin, that is the point being raised by Imani. They have kept to this point right from the beginning of the process. How do you respond to them?
Yeah. One of the so-called think tanks that are always conversing for the allocation of this project. I mean, they are among the people who want this project to collapse. For them, if it does so, they will be very happy. I don't know how nationalistic they are as far as this country is concerned. We are making a move to get some accommodation for security services. I don't know what he's talking about, this barrage issue that he's talking about. We try to get accommodation for our security services and also for the people of this country. And so if there is some kind of challenge, I mean, it is just proper for us to just address the challenge that will confront the project than saying that the whole thing should be abrogated. I mean, I don't know where it's coming from, but I know that we are facing some challenges now, and we will have to get back to the drawing board to see where we can attend issues. And so I'm saying that the rendering that is ongoing now is not beyond the capability of the Minister for Water Resources, Waste and Action. And that's why I'm urging him, wherever he is, to cut short whatever he's doing anywhere and run down immediately for us to sit down and resolve this issue. If for me, this issue is key, and some of us, we want to make sure that this project succeeds. And so, it's a matter of, getting down to resolve the impasse. This is not anything that is beyond us. It can be resolved, and that is why I'm saying that we can resolve it rather than calling for its abrogation. That is not what we want to talk about now.
So, you've assured us that all certain
but I think that increases.
There is a school of thought that believes economic unit of strategy 3. He's been very active in pushing that proposal. Dr. Ama, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
Yes, if you can please raise your voice a little. You are a little faint. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm happy to join you.
Yes. But many people would like to know what strategy 3 has been doing so that it informs the discussion.
Yes, actually, we are a think tank. We just basically raise important issues. The last thing we raised was antitrust laws, basically laws that go against monopolies so that we can actually reduce prices for people. That was the last thing we did. And this new thing is about, security on our roads whilst we travel. And so that's basically a little background.
So can you explain this particular proposal for us, no night travels?
Yes. Basically, we think that in Ghana, we don't make robbery costly for the robbers. We make it very cheap for them. And we want to actually increase the opportunity cost of robbing. Robbers, they don't want to rob when they know that somebody can help you or that they will be caught. Okay, so if you look at the statistics, you find that a lot of the robberies happen at night when the likelihood of you being helped by somebody is low. And not to put down any of the school services, because I love my police. And most of them don't work at night. Most police people go home at night, right? So even if you call them, they may not be there. The thieves know all this, and so they know that the lowest cost for robbing is at night. So I think we shouldn't travel at night. We should have a ban on traveling from 11 p.m. to about 5 a.m. so that cushion that the thieves have will be taken away from them. They will be stealing at a point where they are more likely to have problems in their business.
Yeah, but naturally, the questions will start coming. People travel within this time for business sake, to be able to see some night time, to be sleeping in the course of the travel and all. Don't you think it means that we are slowing down the activities of these ones then?
I really appreciate that critique because, people travel because they have to. Unfortunately, when robberies increase, that means there's now an increased cost of traveling. When your risks go high, you have to pay a lot for it, okay? So one way that you can get around that, if you really do have to travel, is to fly. We do have airlines in Ghana. You can fly if you really have to go. Otherwise, you would have to pay a little bit more for your security. If you really want to travel at night, you may have to pay more than you pay now so that we can pay a lot more police to give you the security. You can't assume that you travel and have no risk like we used to, because the risk is increasing and that makes the cost high. So since maybe we cannot pay, one way that we can minimize the cost is just not to travel during the time that these people operate.
Yeah, they'll be operating any way, that is the daring ones. But we are still exploring that question. Yesterday we were speaking to the police and they were also outlining strategies, especially for those who have been identified as being regular at these robberies. Don't you think their efforts can make it a bit more safer for people to travel at night?
Yes. Oh, okay. So for me, I'm for the ban, yes, but if we recognize that it's more costly and we are willing to pay more so that we can pay the police more, then I wouldn't oppose traveling at night. I oppose it now because I think the risk is too high. We can't just go to business as usual. That's really my argument. You see, we can't just keep traveling at night like we are doing, because the robberies are just going to get worse, actually. So we have to take a decision. If we insist that we want to travel at night, then we have to pay for the increased cost. We would have to pay more so that we pay the police so that they can protect us.
Yeah.
But if we don't, then we just can't, because the risk is too high. Then we just ban it if we don't want to pay more.
Okay. Dr. Stephen Ama, please hold on quickly for us. We want to speak directly with those who are handling the transportation issues. And Alhaji Antieteta is the Greater Accra Regional Chairman of the Ghana Private Roads Transport Union, GPRTU. Alhaji, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Hello.
Yes, Alhaji, you are welcome.
Thank you, brother.
Yes. Will your members be willing to accept the proposal not to travel in the night again and spend it resting?
Our vehicles perform better during the night than the day because of the weather. When the weather is very hot, we find it very hot and difficult to travel. The drivers get exhausted very early, and the passengers as well get exhausted. That's why we like traveling in the night, so that by the daybreak, you'll be at this place.
The next place, destination you are off to. Yeah. So from what is being said, it is becoming increasingly dangerous to do these travels in the night. All the security concerns. Don't you think it is time, perhaps, for you to start looking at how you can adjust this proposal to work for you in one way or the other?
Yes, I think I agree to that suggestion. Because if the daytime would be ideal for the passengers to travel on the buses, I think we have no problem with that.
Yeah. But coming still on it, there is this present accusation that some of your members are not even willing to donate a seat to security personnel. Do they not appreciate the security challenge?
No, we do. The fact is, we want the police also to help us. But, you know, everything starting sometimes, it takes very long time to adjust to the situation. We need how to go, either the police will be in mufti or uniform. And we think that is the best thing for them to do is to be in uniform. Because it isn't our intention to kill people, but to scare the bad ones, like the highway robbers, to scare them. So if the police is, you know, uniform and they are armed, you know, that connection men from where we take off will tell them that the buses coming are having armed men on it. So they will not attend. And it is a point of starting something.
So you believe that it is not that they don't want the idea?
No, not that they don't want the idea. The fact is, until we tell them, and it is not that we have had meetings with the police.
Mm-hmm.
So until we tell them before they can do it. Because if you go in now, they don't know you, they don't trust you, and they don't believe in you. Until we tell them that these are the people we have talked to, and they are going to be on the bus for the safety of yourself and your passengers.
Yeah. Alhaji, we want to thank you for your input here. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Yes. But we still have you, Dr. Stephen Ama. Alhaji has raised one big concern that it's easier traveling in the night. How do you tie this one into the debate?
Oh, yes. What he's raised is an important concern, that they find their operations better at night. I do not dispute with that. But the fact is, it's more dangerous now. Your machines run better, fine. But the point is, you have a lot of cost now because of the risk, right? So the point is, we have to counterbalance the ease of doing business as against the risk. If the armed robberies go on a higher scale, and I think they are going to increase, because when you think about it, there's really nothing to prevent the thieves from operating. The more success they have, the more likely it is that they are going to try to rob more, right? So in that situation, even though it's easier for you to operate at night, the escalating rate of robbery and violence may actually prevent you from enjoying that easier cost at night. The cost from the risk can actually supersede your proposed cost benefit from operating at night.
Okay.
And as I said, I'm not against too much against traveling at night if you take care of that cost.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Ah, okay. Dr. Stephen Amwa, I want to thank you for the proposal and to continue the discussion. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, too.
Dr. Bye-bye. Stephen Amwa, AMA is with the Economic Unit of Strategy 3. But looking at the security concerns here, Daniel Kondo is a security analyst. How should the security concerns inform our position on the highway robberies? Daniel Kondo, you are welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Have we really been proactive looking at security even as we experience all these challenges?
I think we've been doing our best as a nation, except that there are certain lapses. And this has to do with the capacity of the security agencies to deal with the situation of armed robbery. And I wouldn't go for a ban on travel mines just to avoid that. What we need to do is to reinforce the capacity of the security agencies, especially the police, in dealing with the issue. And here we have a situation where in most cases, they do not have the necessary equipment. That's in terms of vehicles, petrol vehicles, between districts, that's along the route, so as to be able to deal with this situation. So, the lack of that capacity, that should not mean a ban or an advice against traveling at night just to avoid armed robbery. After all, there have been instances in the past where armed robbery had taken place during the day on our highway.
But the concern now is that it is more rampant in the night.
Yes, it is. And that's what I'm talking about, reinforcing the capacity of the police.
Yes.
Especially in terms of equipping them with patrol vehicles.
So for you, is this the capacity issue that is making the robbers become so daring?
They know the police are not patrolling, so definitely they have the freedom to operate at night. So assuming between districts or even within a district, the police have the capacity to patrol the area, like between Nsawam and Apeja, and between Apeja and maybe Nkoko. If these things happen regularly, the armed robbery cases, I believe, will reduce.
So, Perhaps you want the police to be at particular terrains on a regular basis, looking at the way the people operate, that is, the armed robbers.
Yes, mapping the cases, the issues of armed robbery on our highways. We know over the past 3 years, there are particular routes where you can be sure that within a period of 1 or 2 months interval, such an issue occur. Look at the Wa Tumu Navrongo Road. It's such an isolated area that people wishing to operate to rob buses would easily do it without any hindrance and without any fear of maybe a patrol, an army or police patrol vehicle coming upon them. The same for the fight between Tamale and Bolga. And it's the same from Uti through Asankaragua to Takwa and to Kumasi. It's a long stretch.
Okay. Mr. Kondo, because of our time, we want to thank you very much. I can hear the horns blaring behind you. Perhaps you are also thinking of traveling in the night. Thank you very much. That is a security analyst on the line, Daniel Kondo. Ababio from Wise saying government should encourage and make air transport affordable to avoid robbery. And this is where we wrap it all up for the week. We want to thank so much our man at the controls, Ben Boche, together with the production assistants, John Poby and Mavis James. And special thanks to Kumadra and the rest of the production team, Chris Asiedu, Bright Agama, and Edmond Tete. My name is Kinsley of Interest.